bandwidth and hosting for the British Tech Network is provided by UK2.net. Innovative, affordable, and reliable web hosting.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Photo Show from the British Tech Network. My name's Carl, and I'll be going through the photographic news of the week as well as talking to our fantastic plethora of guests. We have assembled our very own team of photographic Avengers this week, starting off with the amazing Chris Forsman up there in Chicago. How are you doing, Chris?
Amazing.
Where crap floats down the high street.
Oh, yes. You've had some problems, haven't you, Chris?
We've been a bit of backed up.
Oh, do we have to talk about all that again?
Bit of Imodium required in Chicago.
Below him, up there in Birmingham, we have the mighty Ewan Rankin.
Yeah, Birmingham just smells anyway. So it's.
Well, I wasn't going to say anything.
Tom Tit. Mm-hmm.
And then last but not least, down here in London, we have the incredible Alex G. Fox. How are you doing?
I'm good. Do you notice Ewan's wearing his age on his top?
59. There we go.
I can't see that.
Yeah, I prefer the original.
I never was any good at sex. That's why, maybe.
Yeah, stop sucking her knees.
Oh, that reminds
moving
that
on.
It reminds me, actually, Ewan. You've done a good job last week, I heard, as I was driving around.
Yeah, watching the iPad, mate. I heard. Yeah, and tweeting back at the same time. Very good. Man of many talents.
None of them any good.
But anyway. None of them any good for driving. Times, I'm glad I wasn't near you.
No, you're pretty good. You should do more shows, actually, Ewan, I must say.
Is that saying you want to leave?
Is that saying I have a choice at the moment? Sorry. But let's go on with the news. Photographic news of the week, anyway.
Let's.
Yes, so Canon apparently have fixed the 5D Mark III light leak issue. Now, they could have spent thousands of millions of pounds recalling them all and sorting them all
out. Why?
But why? Exactly, why? Why go to that sort of length when all you need to do, a bit of sticky tape. Now, I'm pretty sure one of our panels suggested this.
Right, I'm not blowing my own trumpet, but on the 20th of April at 2 minutes 34 seconds into the broadcast, I don't know where I got that figure from.
You went back and checked.
Yeah, of course I did. What do you think I remember? Blimey, you do have high opinion of me. Black masking tape, I think, is the word I used.
I feel like I have a pretty good understanding of what you mean by toot your own horn.
Well, I hope you understand. That's it. Anyway, that's what I thought they should do. And apparently,
that's what they've done on certain models. I think they said ending serial numbers 1 and 2, was it? Mm.
I think the sixth digit of the serial number is 1 or 2.
Mm-hmm. I was going to say, if it's number 1 and 2, I don't think they've been that bothered.
Yeah, it's only a two-part recall. Yeah, we've only made two.
When they had them, but when the guys got them back, they opened them up, which I think is very brave, and all they've seen is a massive black tape stuck inside there. Now, that is a fix and a half. Mm. Problem sorted.
Mm-hmm. I've been doing it for years. on all my Bellows cameras, the Bellows, I mean, literally, they're a piece of sort of cardboard with a bit of sort of plastic laminate around the outside of them. And after a few years, the Bellows get cracks in it and tiny little holes. And they want sort of £500 for this bit of plastic that bends in and out. But a bit of black masking tape on the inside or the outside of the bellows does, it affects the picture in no way whatsoever, and it saves your fortune. So black masking tape and low-tack white masking tape are the photographer's best weapon against, well, everything. If we were superheroes, we would just have one thing of black masking tape and one thing of white masking tape, and we could take on the world.
I feel like here's a free pro tip. If they call it gaffer's tape, it'll cost twice as much. So see if you can just find black masking tape. The exact same thing.
So Ewan, were you shocked about this is how they sorted the problem? Your company, your camera company?
Yeah, I actually own Canon, that's true.
Your personal.
Yeah. You know what I mean.
Your own personal camera.
They're my bitches. No, I'm not surprised in the slightest. I think Alex was on the money. I said it was the cup that was holding it. I'm quite surprised to find there is no cup.
That's probably what the problem
was. I thought there was a cup that separated the light from the chamber, and there is no cup separating the light from the chamber. Ergo, there's the trouble. So, but no, I'm not surprised in the slightest, because this is horrific recall time otherwise.
But do you think it's going to be enough, honestly? I mean, are people going to be happy? Mind you, most of them probably get it back and just say, oh, it's fixed. They're never going to bother opening them up.
Well, they probably didn't even notice that it was a fault to start with. It wasn't until people started releasing stories saying that there was a problem that anyone even knew anyway. So, I mean, they were saying that it was only in very light, low light conditions, and it never affected the exposure because the light went out before the exposure was taken. It was only the metering that you took when you looked on the top yourself.
But, I mean, you'll be surprised if you open up some very, very, very expensive equipment, how much bits of tape you'll find in them. I mean, you mm-hmm. open up the back of a computer, half the wires that they don't want to get stuck in some fan or something, it's got tape around it. Yeah,
absolutely. You look at a MacBook Pro, mate, you pay thousands for MacBook Pros, and they're held together with tape. Plain and simple. There's absolutely, you know, there's tons of stuff in there that's taped down.
Well, it's just me when I built PCs.
No.
No, nope. You're meant to use good tape, not sellotape.
So that's probably it then. That's the situation done with Canon and their embarrassing light leak, you reckon?
This will be forgotten. Tomorrow's chip paper, mate.
Okay. Well, for Canon's sake, you're right. But keeping Canon in mind, they're rumoured to be working on an entry-level full-frame camera. Now, I hear in this one, the light leak is optional. So.
Ooh, ba-dum-tish.
Now, we had the Nikon rumour the other week about them developing a similar entry-level camera. Mm-hmm. Sorry, character. So is this just a case of Canon doing Me Too?
Probably.
Mark Two, not Me Too.
I don't think so. I mean, this idea has been around since the 5D came out. You know, this idea has been around. Certainly, consumers want it. I mean, I know it's something that I've championed. I want a full frame SLR, and I don't want to pay $3,000 for it. I don't need 36 megapixels. I don't need the 22 or whatever that the 5D Mark II is. So I think it makes sense to come in with something at a lower price point that appeals to a broader range of photographers that are really interested in a full frame camera.
Mm. I mean, the rumors, the article I'm looking at, the rumors are there, but it doesn't actually say what's expected to come out. It just says they're probably working on one. I mean, that's a fantastic rumor.
Well, that's how rumors work, really. Because if you've got too much information, they become fact, don't they? I mean, what worries me about the, and it does worry me, and I am slightly going towards Chris's line of misery and old man gitness. They're talking about this new 5DX being something like a 45 million pixel sensor. Now, I haven't got my hands on a D800 yet, being as they haven't been released. But I'm a bit worried because of, you know, you look at the lower end cameras and what they've done, they've got a DX size sensor and they've, you know, doubled the megapixels and not necessarily helped the actual quality of the output. Now, one of the things that Nikon and Canon have done by keeping things down to a, you know, 22 megapixel on a full size sensor and being the top of the range sensor they do, it's going to be a very good quality pixel, each individual one. But are they going to end up doing exactly what they've done with all these other things? It's like saying we've got this big sensor with 22 million, so we can put the same sort of crap that we've put in the smaller sensors and just make it 45 million. Are you going to get 45 million of lesser quality, whereas you probably get 22 million of good quality?
I really hope not. I think that's a real mistake. I mean, look at Nikon just the other day announced this 3200. It's 24 megapixel camera for under $1,000. What is it, like $850? It's crazy.
Yeah, but I mean, one of the reasons Nikon have done well with their low light is the fact that the actual holes, the pixels, the hole that the light goes through is so much larger than if you try and cram twice as many pixels onto the same space.
Right. Now, well, that's why I'm saying this 3200 is crazy. I mean, a 24 megapixels on this tiny DX sensor.
I mean, that's what we've been complaining about the whole time, by having too many pixels in a small compact camera. Are they going to do the same? Are they just reacting to the numbers that Nikon are putting out? Because that Canon haven't got a particularly great low light handling at the moment anyway. You know, it really is a bit of a worry. Are they going to go for the big number and completely and utterly miss the mark?
I mean, they didn't with the 5D Mark II. They didn't even really with the 1DX. So my feeling is probably not.
Well, I do hope not for their sake.
I mean, honestly, you know, 12 to 15 megapixels, I think, would be more than I would even really need. But if I could get that in a full frame sensor, you know, around, you know, between maybe 1500.
Mm-hmm. It'll be not a nice camera for the money. I mean,
yeah, exactly.
You're keeping very quiet there, Ewan. Any thoughts?
I think that a lot of if you look at the actual market for purchase of cameras now, whether they're actually being purchased on the pixel count anymore or not by the average consumer, I think there's an awful lot of people aren't now, even at quite low levels, are realizing that the pixel count is not the test of quality within the camera, and they're buying more efficiently and more savvily than maybe a year to 2 years ago. I think the big pixel counts that you're coming through, like the Nokia phone with, you know, the 808 that's got 41 in it, and now talking about this with 45, I think there's an element of pushing the boundaries of the pixel density technology that has to be paid for. And all the time, the camera companies are expanding and looking at different ways of capturing the light at bigger levels and better levels all the time. Whether you need a 45 megapixel camera or not is irrelevant to them. They're looking at improving through size quality as well, because they're getting the shrinkage and they're getting the quality, and then we're going to get smaller cameras, then we're going to get smaller sensors, then we'll get smaller lenses, smaller bayonets, and the whole thing drives off that. I don't think we're ever going to realistically get a high-end camera at 45 megapixels that someone's going to want to go and buy constantly out on the street, but what it's going to do is drive technology further on in the overall size of the camera. And that's got to be paid for. So they've got to release our camera that's got the technology in it, that creates a bit of a fluster, that gets them the press, that gets them the sales, probably even gets an echo effect on sales through other parts of their brand line, that then pays again for the next stage of sensor development. I'm a bit cynical with a lot of the sensor stuff and a lot of the camera stuff really in general that comes out. You know, Lytro does a great job. It's fantastic. I've seen a couple of the pictures that come out with it. It's great. But I thought, you know, I got the impression you were buying a prototype there.
Mm. Kind of.
I still haven't seen one in action, to tell you the truth.
It's pretty cool. I got to use one at CES. It still had some, I mean, it was still, it wasn't a production version. The firmware wasn't finalized. But it was definitely fun to use, and it's definitely something I would like to spend more time with. But more than anything, I'd like to see the technology advance beyond the existing form factor. I think that part of the problem with it is the form factor is just weird to people. It's a really interesting way to get a very compact camera body out of I think it has an 8x zoom. And basically, 90% of that camera is just a tube with a zoom lens in it. More than anything, the magic happens from its special sensor design, and its software is where the real magic happens with the Lytro. So I like to see. I mean, they're already discussing doing things like developing some type of cinema type camera that can do this, where you can take raw footage and then put it into some kind of editor and adjust the depth of field and focus point and things like that. So it's the concept. I mean, the Lytro camera now proves the concept works. And so I think it's really just the start of where they might be able to take it, the technology.
Yeah.
When you said cinema camera there, I thought you'd going to let the audience pick what to focus on there for a second.
maybe. I mean, that would take in the whole other technology as far as some kind of player where you could, you know, take a special file and play it and adjust the focus yourself. But maybe that's something that could happen. Who knows?
Mm-hmm. It'd go well with an iPad or something, wouldn't it? You could touch the part of the screen that you want to focus.
I mean, the sales ethic of technology has not changed from the 60s and 70s. I remember my uncle having, you know, one of the first LED digital watches, and he'd paid thousands for this thing. And it was, you look at it now and you think, God, what a piece of crap. The eight red cells were, you know, the actual things on the dial, there was a huge black dial, and the actual cells were microscopic. You know, you had to kind of like pull your glasses on to read it. It was the proof of concept. It was the age of the digital watch. It was the start of everything. And he paid a lot of money for this thing. And actually, you know, within 3 months, it was completely obsolete because people had got sizes better on the LCDs and those kind of things. And I think to a certain degree that the buying public has got to become more savvy about the fact that they're being used to fund R&D when they get stuff. And if they're getting it, they're getting it to say, I've got something that's considerably better than what you've got. You know, and it's that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but do it eyes open, that's all I'm saying.
Yeah, I mean, it's like the iPhone. I don't know what they called the first iPhone. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, that was a proof of concept, wasn't it? It didn't last very long before they realised it wasn't very good.
Yeah, 3G was out, and they still went for 2.
Mm, strange.
Well, it wasn't... The thing to remember is it launched here in North America on AT&T, which had just... you know, it was singular when they made the deal, and it turned into AT&T right when it launched. They were just still building their 3G network.
Mm.
So it wasn't everywhere. It used a lot of battery power at the time. That they developed the original iPhone, and basically almost no one of the, you know, I mean they, it was still unproven. They didn't know it was going to launch over the world and be a huge success and make Apple a $120 billion company.
Mm.
So, hindsight, yeah, it's easy for us to say, oh, they should have 3G, so dumb. But I mean, think about this, the first people who bought it in like the first 3 months would have paid $700 for it.
Mm.
Cheap.
Because they didn't have subsidies. They didn't do subsidies for the first iPhone.
It's a toe-in-the-water device. I like that. Super chicken. Well done in the chat room. That's it. Toe-in-the-water device, definitely. Where's my pen? I'm writing that down.
As long as there's no piranhas swimming around, you're fine. Carl.
Speaking of phones, BlackBerry. You remember BlackBerry? Those poor little chaps. Used to rule the world. Well, they're trying to fight back against the iPhone and the Android headsets. They've brought out the new BlackBerry 10 OS, and one of its features, interesting for photographers maybe, is it allows you to rewind a shot where you might have missed the magic shutter moment. Does this interest anyone, or is this actually in any cameras currently? Is this new technology, or is this... Oh, is it? Okay.
Nikon has sort of similar features for a while. In fact, I've got one of these Nikon ones over here. I'm testing out these one series cameras, but it does a whole thing where you basically just shoot a whole series of still frames like it's video, and then you just pick the best one. And several Nikon cameras had a feature for a while where you do like a burst of like 5 shots or whatever, and then the camera automatically picks the one that's the sharpest.
Yeah, I mean, I can't remember who it was. Something like Panasonic did it a couple of years ago. As soon as the camera is on, it's taking pictures. When you press the shutter, it records the shot you took, and because the buffer is already full, you've got like the 5 frames previous. So mm-hmm. you can then go back if you've missed your moment in time. I don't know. It's not, you know, forever. It might be a few seconds, but you can go back X amount of frames because it records the shot you took plus the buffer, which is full up previous. When you then accept that's the picture you want, it throws away everything that's in the buffer so you can carry on, mm-hmm. which is obviously the same way as this works. But I'm really glad to see someone's implementing something very useful. I mean, because we know there's a lag with all camera phones.
Mm-hmm.
They need to do something clever. And, you know, it's obviously an intensive application. I mean, because I'm sure you can make an app that did it on the iPhone, but it obviously takes an awful lot of the power of the phone to do it. So if you build it with this in mind and you make the phone, you know, compatible with this from the very start, it should be able to be improved over time as well. Not that BlackBerry allow anyone to improve their stuff, but it, you know, it's a good idea. It's a very good idea for, you know, that type of camera as well, because of it is a point and shoot. All camera phones are a point and shoot. There's nothing particularly clever you can do with them until you've taken the shot. So this is the thing. This is the next step. If you can fix all your pictures after you've taken it with Insta rubbish and various things like that,
steady.
What you need to do now is to determine the best shot to mess about with in the first place. So I think this is a really clever idea.
I think you misspoke. It's Instagram.
Insta shame.
Instagram.
You wait till you discover it, Alex. You'll be hooked.
I've already had all those rubbish things on my iPhoto for years.
Yeah. Ewan, any thoughts?
I said on the photo, I was the digital photography expert on the Computer America show, with a show with Carrie Holtzman 2 years ago. And I said, you know, eventually you're going to go down to Little League, you're going to hold your camera up and press the shutter, and you'll hold it down through the entire swing, and then you'll pick the one that you want, because the buffer size, the processor will be able to capture still images at very fast rates. Your burst mode will go to 25 frames a second, 30 frames a second, and there it will be. And lo and behold, here it is. I think the thing that you're going to have to watch for, though, is that this thing's not going to be capturing at 30 frames a second. So the chances of you getting a perfectly good, perfectly still image out of this, I think, are still pretty low yet, because you're talking about a processor size that's well in excess of the one that they were suggesting might be inside this 10, or the camera that's running the 10 system. It's a concept. It's going to work. There'll be a certain amount of it, but I think you'll probably find that it won't do the job brilliantly.
Here's what I think you are going to find. By the time BlackBerry 10 comes out, no one's going to give a crap.
Well, including BlackBerry potential, RIM potentially. They might be in Chapter 11 by then.
It's harsh.
It's funny because it's true.
This will help, though, because on most of these small cameras, what the problem is, not small cameras, camera phones, you get blur because somebody's moved in between a frame, if you like. Now, if you can capture 10 frames, you will probably find one that's an awful lot less blurry, that half a second when they didn't move. Because you've got such a poor quality camera in the first place that can't cope with low light or speed or anything like that, having sort of 4 or 5 frames to pick from, one of those frames is going to be an awful lot sharper than the others. There always is. If you do a burst mode with something, even say, you know, on a decent Canon or Nikon, you're going to get 4 or 5 frames, 10 frames, whatever you take, and one or two of them are going to be a lot sharper than the others. It's just the way the cameras work. So with this, you will be able to, I mean, please, this might stop some of the rubbish you see on Facebook where everyone's completely out of focus. If they've got the option to go back and just pick the one that isn't completely blurry, then it will benefit everyone, not just the BlackBerry user.
It's not maybe out of focus, Alex. It's artistic.
Oh, well, that's Instagram for you.
Only when you're on
Instagram. It's not artistic, it's drunk.
You've got to 45 degrees to be artistic, don't you know?
So how long do you reckon till Google and Apple copy this technology?
They would never copy anyone's technology.
No, I mean, it's got to work. I don't believe that this is not BlackBerry's technology. This is someone else's that they've paid a license for. There's no question this is not even close to being BlackBerry's technology. It was out there too long ago for it. So the patent on this is already gone somewhere else, and someone else has got it, and it's whether they want to license it and pay for it to be in their phones, and they'll just sit and wait, and I don't think they will, to be honest. Because I can't see it working well in cell phones.
Well, the other thing is you can't copyright the idea of taking multiple frames and picking one that you like. I mean, that's what photographers have been doing for years. You can't patent the idea of it. You can patent a particular implementation.
You can patent the concept of taking a high bit rate or high speed rate and going back and reviewing them.
No.
You can't. I grant you burst mode, but you can start changing the frequency and the speeds of that burst mode up to extremely high levels. But if there's a method of implementation that's different, you can.
Right, but what I'm saying is you cannot patent a concept. You can't patent an idea. You can only patent a particular implementation.
Well, that's not true for a start, because most of the patents that Apple hold are about concepts.
Bibles full of them.
The whole, I mean, that's what patent hogs are about, mate, and carpetbaggers. They're all about coming along with a concept they had a few years ago and never implemented and making money off it.
Yeah, it's a lot of theory stuff, isn't it, rather than proven.
Legally, you can't copyright an idea.
Well, we'll see what if anyone else goes and rips it off and steals it and uses it and be an iPhone 6 or something.
No, wait.
Or 5S.
I think we've agreed it won't. No, move on.
Well, Olympus is... Oh, you don't tell me to move on. Olympus is... Olympus has had their Tough camera leaked by Best Buy, but they also done some weird advertising campaign earlier where they sent out nuts to photography sites and magazines, which they thought they were getting a camera, and they were disappointed they got nuts. I'm not quite sure what they were trying to say with that. Tough as nuts, maybe?
No, it's the beep. What Missy jumps around saying all day. That's what they're trying to say. You got a couple of nuts in the bag and they're trying to sell you. It's the beep. The euphemism for
testicles.
Exactly.
You can say testicles on a clean podcast.
Yeah. Like, oh, you know what? Back to the camera. I really like the look of this.
It's only because it's got red logo in it.
I just think the actual look, physical look of the camera is really, really good.
No, it is. He's right. Sleek. He's right. I hate it, and but he's right.
I like the idea that Olympus may have found a market. Because, well, let's face it, they make quite good cameras most of the time. And if this thing is as tough and as hard, I mean, it's f.2, isn't it? It's full HD. If you're actually, I mean, you're not a clumsy oaf and no one would ever call you it, a 6'7" bloke that doesn't live very far away. But if you're going on a family holiday and you've got your kids and you're climbing up dunes and you're going up mountains and you're doing silly things and it's going to get banged and dropped and everything, not only does this take a looks like it takes a good picture with, you know, the actual numbers it's got with it, but it looks good. And if it's as rugged as it claims to be, I think this could be really, really a good seller.
12.3 megapixel as well, by the way.
There's nothing too much to get Chris too upset about.
Well, I was going to say, I do actually like the styling of it, but I'm going to pull up, because I've actually got a couple Pentax here. If you guys remember, the Pentax was one of the first companies to do this sort of like rugged camera with a IQ Zoom 90WR. And this was back in the late 80s, I think. And they made it for years because I was still selling them in 1998, 1999, I want to say. But they've been making digital ones for a while, and I took one to the Caribbean last year before. Worked brilliant. Took it in the ocean. Took it snorkeling. Took it in the pool. Worked great. They've got newer ones now that are really nice. They have GPS built in, so when you're out and about, you can keep track of where you took your pictures. Spec-wise, very similar. I mean, full HD, but it's I'm looking at the thing here. You can take it down to 33 feet. You can use it in minus 10 degree Celsius temperatures. You can drop it from like 10 feet high, you know, on the concrete, and it won't break. It's pretty interesting too, because Nikon just recently released a Coolpix that's like weatherproof. Yada yada. So it seems like they're all really trying to go after this market. What I do like about the Olympus, though, I mean, I think the design is nice. The Pentaxes look a little garish for me personally, but they have sort of like this extreme look, like extreme people would use it.
So are you saying this is the camera Chuck Norris would use?
I'm gonna say Bond. Bond would use the Olympus. He wouldn't use the Pentax. This is like a classy tough camera. Does that make sense?
Oh yes, tough but with class.
Right.
And $400 price tag apparently.
Yes, Miss Moneypenny.
Does it interest you, Ewan, this one?
I like it. I agree with Alex. I think it looks nice. I think it's functional. It's got a good spec. It takes probably a very decent picture. It's got a little review screen on the back, which is going to be less opportune to crap, to, you know, to smash completely and crap out. And $400, if that stays and holds to about $260, $270 in the UK, I possibly would even buy one myself.
Well, there you go.
Very good. Indeed. Very good. Well done. It's something different. I mean, that's the thing, is that's all we've been screaming for, isn't it, in the last few months? We're sitting saying Olympus make great cameras. We've always said they make great cameras. The problem is they lack a brand awareness and they lack an appeal to the consumer. That appeals to the consumer. A, it looks nice. B, it clearly says that it functions and people are starting to agree that it's probably going to function. Well done, Olympus. Finally. Huzzah.
Round of applause.
There was much rejoicing.
Hooray.
Christ, we all agreed.
It happens sometimes.
Moving on. Sorry, moving on from one of the previous stories of the last week, the fish-eyed Nikon lens has been sold. There was a buyer for it. Now, it went apparently for the full £100,000.
Sucker!
Now, was it any of you guys first? Because I think it was Alex. I reckon he got his check from Canon for the black tape stuff, and he just went and bought that lens.
Yeah, I'll tell you, here's an anecdote. Very short. Sweet. My father was with me last week when I couldn't do the show because he likes a jolly and sometimes comes to watch me work when I'm in nice places. And, we had Chris and Ewan on until some of my slightly important people came in the room, so I decided to turn it off. And I happened to mention to him, I said, oh, there's this Nikon lens going up for sale for $100,000 or whatever. He goes, oh, who'd pay anything like that? And then I sort of started talking roughly about it. He goes, well, saying that, I remember years and years and years ago, and he was in some studio in London, he goes, some guy came in from Nikon and he gave me this lens to play with to test. And it was, he's going, I'm sure it was 6mm. And it was a really, really weird 2.8 lens. And he was going on about it. So I flicked it up. I said, was that it? He goes, that's the lens. So there you go. There's my anecdote. My dad, because I hadn't even told him the story, started telling me about this 2.86mm lens he used in the 70s.
And did he get decent shots from it?
He was just a bit shocked that someone wanted to pay $100,000 for it. So
I thought you were going to finish that. I've got one of those in the loft somewhere, boy. Yeah. I might have to have a look for that.
Yeah. I mean, he was talking about some 8mm lenses he's got, but not the 6mm. So, if he'd had one in the loft, I wouldn't have told him it was worth $100,000. I said, oh, I could really use that for work. Do you mind if I borrow it?
Yeah, so you was 1 degree of separation away from that thing at one point.
Well, I was,
two degrees, sorry.
Genetically, only 1 degree away to 2 degrees, yes. So there's my anecdote.
Well, there you go.
Not that exciting.
No, it's great. Yeah,
I'm
no.
Just shocked still someone bought it.
I'm just upset that I've spent this long talking about it.
Okay.
I'm sorry. No, we spent about last week talking about it. We talked about it this week. I can't believe someone's bought it.
There you go.
Poof.
I told you someone's going to buy it.
Pish.
Oh, next story, security guards. No, it's not. It's not really. few little items have come out this week. First of all, we have, where is it? From Black Rapid announces Lens Bling cap system. Now, I can't believe anyone's not done this before. It's a simple simple lens covers, and it's just got the identifying millimeter lengths on the top. So when it's in your kit bag, you can instantly see what you're pulling out.
Do you know why no one's done this before, Carl?
Go on, then.
Because no one's stupid enough to buy it.
You know what confuses me? It might only be me, but I always put my lens that cap down and have the top cap up.
Nah, that's true.
That wouldn't help. I'd have to have it on the front cap to be able to make any use of that. Plus, I put them all in bags anyway.
I know people who put them in your camera bag with no rear lens cap on, but the rear lens element facing up because it's faster. Yeah. I know lots of people that do it.
But they have to get their sensors cleaned quite frequently.
I honestly don't know. I would assume so, yes.
I looked at this and I thought to myself, what a waste of time and money that is. I mean, these things are $9 a piece. You know, I've got a bag that I carry around. A, I can't fit all my lenses in the bag and pick it up, which I tried to do at Elmug and I couldn't physically lift the bag. So I ended up having to just bring a few down in a smaller bag. And there's you've got rip sections, haven't you, in modern bags where, you know, you put it where you want it and then you put a rip section around it. And I don't know about anybody else, but I don't set the rip sections and then slot the things in. I take all the rip sections out, lay the things how I want them, and then put the rip sections in afterwards. So nothing fits anywhere else anyway. Plus also, I've kind of got like this little sequence in my head where I fit them. So this would be no value for me. In fact, actually, it would probably be a distraction because I get all the caps mixed up in the end and I'd probably pull out something thinking it was 105mm and it wasn't. So
it's funny you say that. I'm always, I pull out a Nikon lens and I find it's got a Sigma back on it, or because obviously all the caps fit.
Yeah.
And I'm forever picking it up. And every now and again, when I have these moments, I better clean my lenses or I better do something. I take them out and every single lens has got the wrong back on it. Some of them say I've got two that have got the same size front and they're from a different lens and they're always mixed up. So if I was doing this for speed, I'd pull out a 105 and end up with a 50.
Teresa summed this up exactly, but it's cute. There you go.
Well, you know, for $9, someone's going to buy it. Because
$9 for a piece of pressed plastic.
I don't need, I've only got one lens. I don't need it.
The kind of person that would buy these would buy a 100 grand Nikon.
I disagree. I think it's a totally different brand of idiot.
Okay. I'm not going to argue about brands of idiot. Idiot's fine, as long as we're agreed on that one.
It's a slightly less well-off one. But anyone in the chat room that already has them, it's a great idea.
Oh, fantastic. Good use of money.
Mm. Yeah.
Mind you, a bit of masking tape and a felt-tip pen, maybe. What else?
That's where you've got the white masking pate. Remember to get the right one. They've got the black and the white. Remember to get that. Mm-hmm.
And if you use the white one for the light leaks, oh, you're in trouble, love.
Right, next item. This is one for Ewan, so he can keep his video camera still. Apparently, Red Rock launches Ultra Cage for DSLR cameras to aid with stability of video shooting. It's a two system that mounts around the camera and helps the stability. Retail Ultra Base starts at $300, and Ultra Cage DSLR starts at $600. But I went to their website, and they're in the thousands. So, Ewan, are you plunking down the money for this?
No.
Sure?
Yeah, no. I'm going back to my steering wheel. I think a lot of the stuff that they've got on their website is really quite nice, and it's good stuff, and it's well made. It doesn't look like it's tut. Even from the pictures, it doesn't look like it's tut. What bothered me was this is the best picture I could get if you're watching the video, and it's crap. I mean, it's bloody awful. You can't see what it's actually doing, and it's just the price is just vastly overpriced.
It's because it was taken without.
It's rigging.
It's rigging.
It's rigging. I mean, this is what video and especially cinema pros use. The cameras have these things around them, and you can attach like lights and microphones and monitors and all kinds of things to help keep it steady. Or you can attach it to rigs to move them around. Or you can attach like special handles to handle them differently. I mean, this is the kind of stuff they would use on cinema cameras. So it's basically, you know, it offers, you know, it you put this on your DSLR and then you can sort of transform it into a cinema camera by attaching all these other things they would be attaching to those type of cameras.
I think what's wrong with my camera?
Well, you need something. I mean, that's the thing is, you know, but having used now a little while and still trying to get used to it, one of the things I find frustrating is I can't seem to find myself at what I believe to be a nice handhold on the unit, and I also find it very difficult for focus because you need the Storks attachment of some description. There has to be some. What's the focus ring has got to have a screwing bit that you can.
There is no reason why you couldn't do that.
Trying to get his hand on the unit, he said.
Yeah.
Yes. But, you know, you can have a rubber band with, I was going to use the word nipple, but then I thought Chris would get too excited. But all you need is something like that. You don't need anything expensive to do all this. I mean, the $300 or whatever a piece, you're talking about $5 of various shapes of plastic. I mean, that's my problem. I've always, whenever I'm at work, quite often I'll go to do a job. Cheap.
Is that what you're saying?
Beg your pardon?
You're saying your problem is you're cheap?
Wait till you see my steering wheel, boys.
Well, I have to go onto jobs because I have to do the stills work for when there's a filming being done for certain things. You know, you take the stills at the same time as you take the filming. And quite often when I go to that, there'll be me and some equipment, and they'll be filming a 30-second segment. And we're not talking about feature film here. We're talking about, you know, maybe a commercial, maybe even an in-house video. And there will be 20 people to do the video, and there'll be 10 other people holding lights, and there'll be lorries loads of rubbish. I mean, and they don't use 90% of it. And say there's 30 people there, 28 of them will be doing nothing at any time. And that's the trouble. As soon as you go to anything from stills to film, not only do they try and quadruples the smallest thing I can think of, 20 times the price, they also 20 times the manpower. I mean, that's why films cost billions of pounds to make. It's not necessarily, and I think this is a problem. If you're going from DSLR photography to film, you're going into the realms where they start to literally, I don't want to use that word, they take advantage of the fact that people in film and everything with film has been historically so overpriced and so overmanned, and they're trying to push you into that. And I really do object because of, I mean, it's always a bugbear of mine, but $300.
No kidding.
Oh, but $300
for a bit. You have an incoming call from Chris Forsman.
Oh, has he disappeared again? $300 for a piece of plastic is just too much money.
It is. At the end of the day, it really is.
You could go and buy yourself a half decent Lumix for that, and you could probably take a full HD video with that as well. So it's just too much money.
Wait, well, till you see my steering wheel, boys.
Yeah, we are waiting with bated breath. Okay,
you didn't spend $300 on that.
Does it not five?
Now a little calm down, Alex. Now before we move on, for guys in London, we've got the London Festival of Photography next month in June 2012. Let's see, 18 exhibitions and 30 events taking place in London around the King's Cross area. Most of these are free, apart from two.
Hold on to your wallets.
Yeah. So there's lots of pictures for taking. There's lots.
Is
of
this where people go around with their cameras and like security guards come up and harass them?
No, it's where you go around with your camera and you get propositioned after dark.
Ooh,
that's a story you have to tell us another time, Alex. I think.
King's Cross is condom and syringe country, mate. It's not.
It's not as bad as it used to be. Honest. They kicked me out of there, so it's not as bad as it used to be.
We'll be there.
Right, let's move on. So, quick six things this week. Now, at the moment, it's no good for us because we got rain and clouds every single night here, but six tips and tools or tricks to suggest to help with astrophotography, but on a budget. No multi-million pound cameras or anything like that.
Oh, well, we're not talking film then.
Well, I don't even think you need a fancy camera or anything. I think the real expensive thing that you need to buy is one of those, I forget the name of it now, but it's a special mount that can track the motion of the Earth. It's like a rotating thing. They use them for telescopes too.
Chris wants you to buy a rotating thing. What's the URL for that for the show notes, Chris?
Bend over and I'll show you.
right as well.
But he is, yeah, no, he's exactly right, yes.
It's a mount, I forget what it's called, like an orbital mount or something like that.
Yeah.
But it's mount. They also use them for telescopes. Mm-hmm. And maybe beyond that mount, maybe also you can get an adapter to put your camera on a telescope too. So if you already got a telescope.
Cool. Right. I mean, I happen to be quite into this. Well, I used to be into this, and I do own a telescope, and it does have an electronic tracking ball thing, and it's got a GPS thing, and it plugs into, in fact, I don't think I've got any Mac software. I think it's so long ago, I think I've only got PC software, and I've got a DSLR attachment that goes onto it. The only trouble I ever found with it is I I liked it, but I wasn't that good at it. So I used to just basically do lunar photography.
Because you have more light.
Sorry?
Because you have more light to work with.
Exactly, because I wasn't very good at it. And the only trouble is I had to keep going to buy new little eyepieces for the end of the telescope because everything was too big. I couldn't actually fit the full moon in because my telescope was magnifying it too much. You can do really, really well with a whole kit, and I'm talking about maybe £100. You can get a telescope kit with a camera lens adapter or a camera adapter. Remembering, they get an adapter, but you need a second bar basically that holds the camera onto the same tripod as you've got your telescope on, because when I originally bought it, I didn't, and I was having one tripod holding the camera and one holding the telescope, and whenever I tried to move it, I was having to try and move two tripods at the same time, and it wasn't very easy. But for about £100, if you look around, you can get really nice kit. There's quite a few books on the market which are far out of my league. They are really, and they say amateur, but there's an awful lot of information out there, and it looks really, really good, but I'm just no good at it. That's all I can say.
Anything to add, Ewan?
No, I mean, I know nothing about this. I've tried doing little bits here and there, and I've got a really nice big telescope at the bottom end of the office there. I've got a Skywatcher 200mm Dobsonian, and Ellis and I take that out regularly and use it, but I've got no T2 mount for it or anything, so I need to get that sorted. But again, it's moon's great, but everything else is just too far away from it. It's just a little dot of white light, and that's the end of it. There's the best shot I've ever shot of the moon. I just decided one day, I got my camera out, and I stuck a 200mm f2.8 lens on it and cranked it up to about 1600 ISO and had 3 2x converters on it. So it was up to 1600. And handheld, I shot a half-decent image of it on a 1/30th of a second exposure. And it blew up quite nicely. It did all right, but it wasn't crystal clear. It wasn't sharp. It wasn't NASA quality or anything. And that's the one thing I think that keeps people away from astral photography, is that if you're used to shooting things on a daily basis that you have to get right, that you have to have crisp and clean so that they can be reproduced and blown up to very big sizes for use in advertising or things like that, there's a certain element of getting a grainy picture of the moon and going, well, yeah, but I wanted a really clear one of it. And that's my problem. I'm too much of a perfectionist with what I want to see on the image that, I mean, I'm never going to show it anywhere, so what's the point? And that's the thing, is it, I'm a pain in the ass for this type of stuff. You know, people have said, oh, God, Ewan's good at everything he does. Well, no, he's not. He just doesn't do the things he's crap at. That's and that's it. I'm crap at this, so I don't do it.
Yeah.
Good advice.
There is one other thing I do happen to remember vaguely. It was all to do with long exposures. You did... Oh, that was a great noise. You do like 10, 30-second exposures, and then you put them all together, and that's how you get your shot.
Mm.
It's not like one long exposure for X amount of time, because it doesn't work. I, this is where I had trouble, and the software might be an awful lot easier now.
A lot of the pictures that I see on Twitter that come through of the ISS, you can see there's definite stops through them, and it's 10 pictures that have all been joined together. But I think what they ought to do, I know it's probably cheating, but I would go into Photoshop and I would close the gaps. So I'd got one continuous line. I don't see the point of having a dotted line across the sky. It's like, cut here.
Well, you know, if there's not an awful lot else, you should be able to use some sort of auto align layers or something and lay them on top of each other. You could have 10, 30-second exposures and lay them on top of each other. Almost do an HDR of the whole thing with an alignment. And you should get a nice picture. But like I say, I will get back into it. Funnily enough, because of this question, I did look to see if I could find one of my books, and I think I've given them away. So I've actually ordered a new book off Amazon because I thought, you know what, I've got the equipment, why not have another go at it? So in about 6 months' time, I might be able to produce a picture. You never know.
Okay. Well, my tip is do it at night, but there you go. Okay. So moving on to the question. Only one question this week, but we ran out of time anyway. Hi, fellas. Simple question, really. I'm looking to take the plunge and buy into the DSLR market. What would be a recommendation for around about £1,000 as a starter kit? And that's cheers, Mike from Stroud.
What's £1,000 like? About $1,600?
$1,600,
$1,700. I'm tempted to say just get like your entry level kind of Canon Rebel, or even like what's the D? I guess heck, you might as well get the D3200, 24 megapixels, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Something like that, and then budget a little bit to get, you should probably be able to get like two, maybe three single focal length lenses. That's probably what I would do.
So you're going with the fixed focal length.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I would, because of you're getting into it. We'll all agree that we, unless it was a really crap a kit lens that we bought with our first Canon or Nikon, we still have, and I still use some of the first lenses I ever bought from Nikon. I would say that if this is your first, don't spend that much on the camera. Spend $300 or $400 maximum on the camera. Buy secondhand, it doesn't matter. But buy maybe two or three good lenses, because those lenses are going to stay with you, but the camera body probably won't.
Mm-hmm.
So buy two or three good lenses. And then when you do eventually get good at what you're doing, which I'm sure you will, when you do get good at it and you want to upgrade the body, those lenses will still be good lenses. So don't spend too much on the body. Spend all you can on the lenses.
Yep, enough good tip. Ewan?
I would, to be specific and stay within my area of knowledge being Canon, I would say having purchased it, if you get yourself a second-hand 450D, if you don't want to shoot any video, you'll be more than happy with that, and you'll probably get one of those for £200 to £250 off eBay, and it'll be probably perfect. There'll be nothing wrong with it. If you want to buy new and you want to do video, having got one, I'd say the 600D is superb. There's nothing wrong with it at all as a camera. A lot of the images that I've shot over the last few weeks, I've compared it to similar images that I've shot on my 1D Mark II, and the pictures are very, very close. There's minor differences, but nothing horrific. I'd certainly get someone to pay for it commercially as a shot. And then go and get yourself 50mm lens so that you've got that ability to go f1.8 and play around with it. That's going to cost you about another £90. Get yourself some macro tubes, and I agree with Alex's point there. Get yourself the cheapest way to get the body that you want. So if you want video, I'd say 600D, go on eBay, see what you can get, or see what deals you can get going down to your local camera store and try and talk them in circles. But lenses, far better. Agreed. Most definitely.
Mm-hmm.
There, consensus.
We all disagreed again.
Damn, I didn't come on this show.
Lenses
so
is the
agree.
Way to go, it seems.
Mm-hmm.
Right, then this show and all the other shows on the network would not be possible without our great friends at UK2.net. They really do help us stay around and bring us to you. I keep nicking that from someone. They got some fantastic offers at the moment. You can get VPS Cloud starter sites. They have their site builder system still running, which I still like to play with every now and again, because you can go and have a toggle, make up a website, see what it looks like, and purchase it if you so wish. Dedicated use service as well, and VPN as well. I purchased VPN just the other day so I could pretend I was in America for some reason. We won't say why.
Hey.
Hey.
Well, you can change your IP address and pretend you're somewhere else.
Okay.
A VPN.
Yeah, fair enough.
And it was £4.95 normally, but I used our offer code and I got it for about £2.80, I think it was. There you go. It's good. Now, I would tell you the offer codes, but someone hasn't sent them to me.
There's just too many.
There are too many.
There is just too many, plain and simple, mate. There is so much you can get at the moment. It's. We're going to put them up on the website in the next day or two over the weekend. But basically, British Tech Network gets you 20% off domains. So, I mean, there's stuff like that. I mean, no one does 20% off anything anymore. That's crazy. UK2, awesome. Support them. And we got loads of stuff coming up with the F1 show as well. Stay listening for that, because that's going to be awesome.
And they were also, when I bought my VPN thing, I had a moment where I completely messed things up, and I got into their online help thing and I had an answer from Kevin in about 30 seconds. Fantastic. Mm.
Thanks, Kev.
Yes. You probably thought you complete plum, but yes.
There is that.
I didn't know he knew you.
Okay, gentlemen, where can we get hold of you, Chris?
You know, you can get me at ArsTechnica.com, where I'm a brilliant, non-award-winning writer.
Yes.
And also on the Twitters at Forsmack.
Mr. Pulitzer.
I get tons of follows in the UK all the time.
Yeah.
So.
Because you come here.
Yeah. Yeah. Thanks, guys.
And you write good articles as well, so, you know.
That too.
I'm not too shabby.
Having said that, though, Chris, if you're a journalist who researches a story, you're never going to fit in on this network. Just... You need to start making it up as you go along, dude.
Well, I do that here.
Oh, okay.
So.
Oh.
Damn, you have me fooled.
Ewan, where can we get on to you, sir?
You can get me at Ewan Rankin on Twitter, or you can follow the network on at British Tech News on Twitter as well. And you can get me for commercial photography work by going to ewanrankin.co.uk or sending me an email to ewanrankinphoto@gmail.com. There you go.
I'm glad that was clear.
I actually got an email today from someone who said, I've looked at your website, I'd like to buy some work. They would be the first person ever to buy it from the website, but we'll wait and see.
And Alex, where can we get hold of you?
I don't know. Twitter I do. Alex G. Fox. I have actually finally got my proper old, had it for 10 years website back. And that should be up and running in a few days. Just to let you know, Ewan, I rebuilt one of my work websites and I went on to UK2 because I host it there. Mm. And they've got a... it's free and it comes with it, but it's just a little gadget that you sort of click and it automatically keeps putting you back on Google on various things, and it does your sitemap and it does all that. And it just basically checks that you're going to get as high up as you can on the lists. And it's all free and it's all part of the UK2 family of software and things you get access to when you join UK2. And within about 2 hours of doing it, some customer wrote to me and said, I've been looking for you for ages and ages and ages. Finally, I searched your name and it came up on the internet, and they've ordered, I won't tell you how much, but it's gonna an awful lot of work, and that's purely because I used UK2 and I used their built-in, I can't remember what it's called, but it helps to get you back up the charts in Google and various things like that. And within an hour I got an email off of my website, and I'm loving it. So
well, write to marketing@uk2.net and tell them that, for God's sake. Please. Well, no, it's the same for everyone. If you get great service, we're all quick to complain, but when you get great service, and I'd say most of the people that do bother to write into me say how much they enjoy UK2, send it to marketing@uk2.net and tell Craig how much you love it.
Well, I will do, but I'll make sure I know what the bit of software is called before I do it. Yeah. And also I get emails about, you know, every couple of days telling me, reminding me, do this, it will help, do this, it will help. And it's brilliant. And it has done exactly what it said it will do.
Good.
Good stuff. My name's Cole, and my Twitter, Claw0101. I've just changed my real name to my Twitter address, so that'll be a lot easier. Hope you enjoyed our show. That's it. See you next week. Happy snapping. Stay safe. Hello everyone, and welcome to another edition of the Photo Show from the British Tech Network. My name's Carl, and I'm joined by I'll start again, hang on.
Carl Perkington.
Anyway. Right, sorry about that. I went down a rat. I just didn't know where I was going. Then. Right.
Do it again.
I told you it's been like 2 weeks.
You know I'm leaving that in, don't you?
No.
Hi, Carl. It's Alex here. How are you, mate?
Yeah, no, shut up.
I'm very well.
Do it again.